You are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the Pod 2, Episode 4. J.J. Sefton here, joined once again by my co-blogger in arms and good friend, CBD. It is Saturday, the 17th of September, 2022. CBD, how's it going, buddy?
Oh, it's going great. You know, we're in late September weather or mid-September weather, which in the Northeast is just spectacular. It's, it's cooled off. It's lovely grilling and sitting outside and having cocktails. It's a wonderful thing. And I just wish that I lived in the United States. It would have been, I think it'd be a lot more fun living in a free state rather than the communist state of New Jersey. Recently, I've come across the unpleasant issue that New Jersey is perfectly comfortable with restricting my rights at every turn. And it came to the fore with my pistol permit. As some of you may know, New Jersey is grudgingly accepting the holding in Gruen versus New York State Pistol Association, I think it is, that yes. May issue is no longer the law of the land. But they are being huge pains in the asses. It's unbelievable. And I've talked about this before, and I hope I'm not beating a dead horse, but the idea that I have to jump through hoops for the convenience of the state is anathema to a free society. And yet we have been so beaten down by the jackbooted thugs of an overweening regulatory state that we accept it. And it's unfortunate. Anyway, I'll get off that rant. So
no. Well, I'm in the free state, the relatively hopefully remaining free state of Wisconsin, which is a wonderful thing. The irony here is that we have, I'm probably about less than an hour, maybe 45 minutes away from Madison, which is one of the seats of the progressive rot that literally destroyed this country. But most of the state is a wonderful place. People are absolutely friendly beyond belief, very helpful, very lovely, and normal. They have their guns. They got their, we got trucks here. And we just leave people alone. We don't bother people here. It's a wonderful, I say they don't, but I'm here now. So it's, we don't do these things, except obviously for the enclaves of, Milwaukee and Kenosha and Dane County, I think it is, which these were the places where they stole Wisconsin in 2020. But to your point with guns, CBD, it is always a cromulent point of information that whenever a ruling in the Supreme Court and the judiciary in general rarely goes against the left, because they've spared no expense over the decades to rig the courts in their favor. Whenever a ruling goes against them, they just don't accept it. So in New York, Bruen versus the New York Pistol Association, it totally affirms people's rights to concealed carry. But what did they do? Hochul and company put all these edicts in place saying, yeah, but you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do that, which defeats the entire spirit of the ruling. And so it's basically thumbing their nose or really flipping the bird at the court. So this is just another, as we said, indicator that all is not well in the state of Denmark, so to speak. And we're heading for trouble, or we're heading for some sort of a defining moment where something has got to give in that regard. But switching gears to the big news that happened over the last day or so, and this is absolutely delicious. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis shipped about 50 illegal aliens to the enclave of Martha's Vineyard, and the left went absolutely apoplectic over it because, for the last however many years, the battle cry is nobody is illegal. We have declared ourselves sanctuary states, and there are no illegal aliens. They're just undocumented immigrants, and we welcome them with open arms. But when they say we welcome them with open arms, it's that we welcome them to any other red state and don't come here, but just populate all the red states so that you can get your voter cards, register as Democrats, and then turn that state into another blue hellhole. But it's just absolutely delicious to watch the meltdown from the left. And what's really interesting is that the citizens of Martha's Vineyard, who of course are card carrying, feel good, do gooder liberals, leftists, really, all of a sudden they're at each other's throats. Some of them say, no, send them back. They're destroying our property values. And the other ones are saying, what are you talking about? You're being a hypocrite. It's a wonderful thing to see.
It's absolutely delicious. And one of the most delicious things is that they simply cannot constrain their latent racism. it is absolutely a wonderful thing. You know, Martha's Vineyard and that area of Massachusetts is extraordinarily beautiful, and it is extraordinarily expensive, and it is obviously predominantly white, because, you know, there are more white rich people than black rich people or brown rich people or red rich people. That's just the way of the world, or at least the way of America. And they have insulated themselves to such an extent from the reality of America, from the typical experience of a typical American, that when they see a brown person on the street, they call the cops. Because brown people, their function in life for this upper crust, this 0.1% of society that lives on Martha's Vineyard, the function of these people is to mow their lawns and wash their dishes, and if they clean up well, carry the hors d'oeuvres at their cocktail parties. And that is it. They are to be seen and not heard, and they are to leave when their work is done. And the idea that these people should be Americans is a wonderful thing in the abstract for these people, as you said, just as long as they're not in their backyards. And it is the most magnificent expose of who these people really are. And we need more of it. And I think that Abbott and DeSantis did a fantastic job exposing these people.
Right. I was going to say Abbott shipped, I think, a busload of them to the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C., which is the residence of the alleged vice president, Kamala Harris.
And DeSantis said, hold my beer.
Exactly. And Harris has been going on, and it is wonderful. And Harris has been going on and on about crisis. There is no border crisis. And she was, I believe she was tasked, among other things, of she was set up for failure, really, by the Biden junta to being the point person on border security. And there is no border security. It's an open border. I mean, the border exists as a line on a map and nothing more. They are doing this intentionally to destroy our culture and destroy our society with floods and floods of mass migrants who will not become American citizens. Only in the breach, really, when they're all 100%, they make sure are registered as Democrats. But as for Martha's Vineyard, it's really fascinating. It's not only an incredibly expensive place to live, it is the enclave of the elite, so-called, or self-described, of our country. Politicians, the Hollywood set, you name it. Those are the people that have the most expensive homes there, up to and including the Obamas, which is funny because supposedly sea level is rising to such an extent, you'd think the value of land on an island like that would be worth zero or less than zero. But of course, you tell that to your local Coldwell banker of Martha's Vineyard that I'll buy this mansion for you for $1.380. It's not going to happen. So for these people to totally go against their own. The hypocrisy is just unbelievably radiant. And the fact that not only is it the elites that live there, the money that they have and the money that they will not spend for themselves. The mayor there of Martha's Vineyard declared some sort of a state of emergency over 50 people. Hey, honey, why don't you shell out some open up your purse strings? You've got millions and millions of dollars that nobody else in the country has. Certainly not the border states, which have been destroyed thanks to the ban on oil and gas drilling. So, but of course they won't do that. They'll just deport them off the island. Forgot there was some. Who was the idiot? Was it on CNN? They compared the mass migration to the Holocaust. And I'm going, you have got to be. I mean, it's laughable, but it's disgusting in the extreme, and it makes you crazy, especially considering my background with my family. I mean, yeah, I'm sure my mother would have really, they really would have, been horrified by being shipped to what Baden-Baden or wherever. As opposed to Mauthausen.
The histrionics on the left over this are absolutely fantastic. Yeah, the comparison to the Holocaust is offensive. The comparison to the internments during World War II is also offensive. Those people were American citizens who were interned illegally by
FDR.
Yeah, probably the worst president of the mid to late 20th century. Although I have to say that Carter, I don't know. From my perspective, Carter really, I think he retired the trophy, but FDR is up there. He's certainly one of the worst, let's put it that way. He interned many, many, many thousands of Japanese of loyal Japanese citizens. Now, was it the right decision? I don't know. Was it illegal? Probably. But he did it.
It really was a heinous thing to do. It's like to prove your, you know, you have to prove your loyalty, you know, based on your race. But again, it's like we had this discussion, I guess, in the last episode. What happened was, it's a product of the times. You know, it is horrible what happened. It is a horrible thing that I had a relative who, you know, Jewish, of course, and, you know, she typed 120 words a minute flawlessly on a manual typewriter. And still, she had to change her name to make it less Jewish so she can get hired at, I believe it was both Inland Steel and Carnegie Steel, because they didn't hire Jews. But they knew she was Jewish, but, you know, they looked the other way because of her abilities. But again, it reflects the times that we lived in at that time. Same thing 200 years ago with, you know, railing against Washington and Jefferson for owning slaves when they were the ones who started a nation that set into motion the end of slavery, you know, 47 years later, probably quicker than any other society that had ever existed, is foolish in the extreme, but it serves their purpose because they want to, it furthers a meme of America as an illegitimate and racist society. But this whole immigrant thing is just, it's amazing. And now they're accusing, they want Gavin Newsom, who is another disgusting, brilliantine stick insect, who, you know, leftist hack. Wants to, you know, he's
stick insect. I love that.
I can't claim originality. I stole that from Fawlty Towers, but as describing John Cleese. But it does describe him perfectly. And total hypocrite. He's bringing in illegal aliens by the millions into California to ensure that he and his party's permanent majority and permanent power. And he's accusing Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott of human trafficking. When, yes, I'm sure Greg Abbott, you know, raped children and shook down all the immigrants for every last peso they had and shoved them into a tank car or the back of a tractor trailer with no oxygen and no food. Yes, that's exactly what they did, Gavin.
Didn't he bust them out of San Francisco when he was mayor of San Francisco?
He may have done that.
I recall that vaguely. I might be wrong, but I think he did something like that. But of course, it's fine for the Democrats. Democrats are
look at this. Look at this, Lori Lightfoot. I mean, they did it. Abbott sent them up to Chicago. What did she do? She turns around and sends them to Oak Park, which is it's a very wealthy suburb of Chicago. And actually, believe it or not, I believe leans Republican.
Yep, I think they voted Trump in 2020, amazing. Which is, of course, a coincidence that she sent them there.
No, of course.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Anyway, so let's move on from Martha's Vineyard and the rank hypocrisy of the left into a topic that I find interesting, and that is the Queen and what I wrote in my notes as her idiot spawn. And my question is, how will Charles reign? His name is Charles III, King of England. England, Wales, what else is part of the UK now?
Well, Scotland. England, Scotland.
Norland, yeah, Northern Ireland, Scotland.
Bahamas, is Bahamas independent, or is it
I don't know.
I don't know who the hell knows.
The Commonwealth.
But I was going to pronounce his name as we do in Brooklyn, Charles III. But
Charles the Toid.
The Toid.
No, but what I find interesting, and not interesting, but sad about Charles, is that his rejection of the glory of perhaps the greatest country in the world, superseded, of course, by the United States, but over their 1,000-year history, they did an amazing number of things. We talked about this last week, right. And yet one of his more famous comments about his impending reign was that he was going to be the defender of faith rather than the traditional statement, which is that the monarch is the defender of the faith, which is the Church of England. And the Church of England is an important part of the United Kingdom. And the Church of England, up until recently, was a staunch defender of freedom of religion. And his change from being the defender of the faith to the defender of all faiths, which, of course, is a pan to Islam, because he's an Islamophile. Probably his first bang was some Muslim kid, you know, from Bahrain.
Female or male?
At the Studi Public School that he went to. God. Anyway, so back to Charles. You know, he's a small thinker. He confuses erudition with intelligence. And there's been actually a very interesting little bit of tidbit about the way he conducts himself in private. And he's a bit of a fop and a bit of a pompous ass. His servants squeeze out his toothpaste onto his toothbrush form every morning. His bath has to be barely tepid. He has to have his shoelaces ironed. Now, these are not things that are going to endear him to the British people, to the people of the United Kingdom. They saw a very, very accessible queen for almost 70 years. Oh, my God, even more. No, about 70 years.
70 years, yeah.
Yeah. And the change to this pompous ass is going to be very interesting and probably very bad for the future prospects of the monarchy in the United Kingdom.
Well, the monarchy to my, you know, I think Elizabeth was the sun setting finally on the final sunset ray of light of the British, what was the British Empire. She just her basically because of the generation she belonged to, as well as just her demeanor, as we talked about, and her, you know, the way she carried herself and just her, the overall, again, there's no other word, just her demeanor, the way she carried herself and what she symbolized being, you know, both the British monarchy and history, and as well as the generation from which she came, which was World War II. I mean, when she was in the, I don't know what the category was, when she was in the military service, to the extent that she was, she actually learned how to drive trucks, how to fix trucks, how to drive motorcycles. I mean, the woman was a practical person. You know, Charles is a complete inept knucklehead. I mean, and other than that, he's wrong about everything. And this whole bending over for both Islam and, I mean, when you say you're a defender of all faiths, meaning he's surrendering to Islam. I mean, I've predicted because of the birth rate thing going on and the lack of a birth rate of essentially Caucasian and indigenous Brits and even Americans and most Europeans, and the birth rate going through the roof of immigrants, legal and otherwise, from Islamic countries, England is going to be eventually an Islamic republic, whatever. I surely predict at some point that Westminster Abbey will go the way, as I've mentioned, of the Hagia Sophia in Istanbul, which was a cathedral at one point until the Muslims conquered it however many centuries ago. But he's what the monarchy represents, whether people take it seriously these days or not, it still means something to a certain extent. And when he does things like, you know, rip the state of Israel, defend or obfuscate the crimes that are committed in his own country, like, the Rotherhithe or Rotherham rape scandals in Birmingham and all over the country. When they try to whitewash all of these things, I remember horrified as that British soldier was beheaded in broad daylight a number of years ago, and that was completely whitewashed. So there's that, and then his whole embrace of the climate change nonsense. So this is. He's a disaster. And again, he's meaningless to a certain extent because he's a figurehead. But at the same token, the monarchy sort of still represents an official represent in a way the state. And people do look at that and they do take the words of the monarchs seriously in that regard. So that's not a good thing.
One of the things that Elizabeth, she impressed me the most by being she was regal in many, many ways. However, as you just pointed out, she was a woman of the people in many ways, too. And it's sort of a weird segue, but Buck Throckmorton in Ace of Spades wrote a couple of days ago about the Nikola Motor Company fraud trials. And he wrote something I thought was very, very interesting, talking about GM investing so much money in these ridiculous EV schemes. And he wrote that GM has thousands of employees who could have quickly sniffed out this fraud simply from their expertise in operating, designing, and manufacturing mass market vehicles. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Unfortunately for GM, their CEO is not one of those employees. This is, again, Buck Throckmorton on Ace of Spades. That is a perfect description of Charles III. He does not know how to be king. Elizabeth knew how to be queen. She knew what her place was. She knew that her place was not dictating political policy for the country. She knew that her place was as a figurehead, yes, but also as a lodestar for what can be, the best of Great Britain. And Charles will diminish that attitude. He will diminish the idea that the monarchy is the sort of the representative of all that is great about Great Britain.
It's interesting. You bring up the analogy with like the CEO of GM with King Chuck there. There's a striking difference in that, you know, he, for however old he is, I mean, since he's an infant, he's observed this woman and, you know, for all of his life and how she behaved and how she acted. And yet he's completely an inept fool. I mean, it doesn't make sense. But on this side of the coin of the equation, as we have said so many times, the people that are occupying the C-suites of these major corporations have, come out of Ivy League schools or other schools or of the generation where they have been intentionally brainwashed by Marxist-Leninists in schools to think capitalism stinks, America stinks, and so on and so forth. And so they are completely immersed in this diversity. I put the inclusion before equity because it spells out D-I-E. The diversity, inclusion, equity nonsense that has nothing to do with being competent and knowing what you're doing, as opposed to color of your skin, dealing with racial issues, dealing with, you know, fighting climate change, fighting mythical white supremacists, and all of these things which have nothing to do with making cars, drilling for oil. We can't drill for oil, but, you know, making cars, growing crops, and so on, and you know, flying airlines, and so on and so forth. So they have an excuse. I mean, they were brainwashed. What the hell is King Charles' excuse? The most prime examples of a woman and of a leader and of whatever, and yet he became a complete knucklehead.
I wonder if he is constitutionally opposed to free markets and the capitalist system, because if you look at the history of his class, they went from the 18th century, the beginning of when capitalism began to roar, when free markets began to roar, when the amazing
industrial revolution
unleashing of the British man began, they were ascendant. And then within 50 or 100 years, they lost their position in society, at least from the perspective of wealth. And the monarchy and the royalists lost almost everything. And perhaps, you know, in his weak-minded way, he sees free markets and capitalism as being the destructor of his way of life. And in many ways, it's true. Elizabeth understood much, much better than he how the world works. And she was willing to be the representative of all that was great in Great Britain, as I said before. And Charles is unwilling to do that. Anyway, listen,
before you go, I'm just saying it was an interesting parallel that he's named Charles, because as we all know, Charles the First led to the British Civil War and Oliver Cromwell. And so it's an interesting parallel. He's sort of completely out of the king, another one that was completely out of touch with the citizenry and with the growing power of Parliament, you know, that whole thing. So maybe he's trying to get Charles I's head back on his shoulder.
Yeah. And he'll get another Oliver Cromwell before he gets that. Anyway, yeah. So let's take a short break and we will be back with maybe how to steal the elections.
And we're back, Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, season 2, episode 4, JJ with CBD. And the subject is the elections, and specifically the possibility of shenanigans at any level interfering with and possibly upsetting what is supposed to be at minimum the Republicans regaining control, one or both chambers of Congress, to a massive red wave that subsumes the Democrats and wipes them out completely. But we talk about shenanigans, and obviously there's ballot dumping and all that other kind of nonsense. But there was something that's very alarming that is coming from the actual White House itself that is really threatening to interfere or at least impose federal control on local elections to the extent that it could and probably would affect the outcome, not in the Republicans' favor.
So one of Ace of Spades' regular commenters sent me a link to an article I'd read several months ago, and as a reminder, and that's one of the reasons why we're discussing it today. Molly Hemingway writes, when President Biden ordered all 600 federal agencies to, quote, expand citizens' opportunities to register to vote and to obtain information about and participate in the electoral process. That is a big problem because he is doing what he did with President Trump, attacking the legitimacy of an opposition party, but he has expanded it to all 600 agencies to do what they can. Now, there is nothing in this in the Constitution that grants any power whatsoever to the federal government to interfere with the electoral process, the voting process in the states. It simply does not exist. The Voting Rights Act is a travesty. I think most Southerners would agree with me. It's a disgusting intrusion into states' rights, and yet we've tolerated that. And unfortunately, as Molly Hemingway says, constitutional scholars and election integrity specialists began to worry exactly what was up his sleeve. And that is the question. And I have to correct Sefton. He said the possibility of shenanigans. I think it's a certainty of shenanigans. The question is, what shenanigans are we going to get to prevent the red wave that we all hope is going to occur in November of 2022?
Yes, I stand corrected. I guess I should have had, you can't really see my sarc tag for sarcastic after I said the word. I should have said possibility, quote unquote, which means, yeah, of course, you better believe there's going to be, you know, they're going to be fooling around probably in the same areas, like unfortunately Wisconsin and in Atlanta and so on and so forth, that through the election to knucklehead over there, the brain damaged cold, drooping Kohlrabi in the White House in 2020. What also of note is that I forgot who it was, whether it was Tom Fitton at Judicial Watch, or there were a number of lawsuits that were flying, or at least even in Congress, the GOP, the people that had a pulse and gave a shit about what's going on, they wanted to see the memorandum that the Biden junta has sent out to the executive branch, and they have been stonewalled. So we cannot see what is up their sleeve, which means if they ain't showing it, it means they're going to be doing something really crazy and really wildly illegal, even over and above the fact that they're even announcing that they're doing this, which is illegal, because elections are supposed to be, by the Constitution, set up by state. States set up their election. They have to. And that's it. The federal government cannot interfere with the states and how they conduct their elections. So for them to hide this information, it just smacks of guilt right there. But it smacked of guilt just by announcing that he's going to be sicking the executive branch on the states to interfere with the way they conduct their elections so that they can rig it in their favor. This is, again, another banana republic, you know, nonsense that is just that we have to sit here and take it, or so, we don't know what's going on. But there's no how do you stop this? You can't. Okay.
I don't. Yeah, I see no way to stop it. I mean, if you look at the way that he's weaponized the Department of Justice and the FBI, expanding that, you know, hyper-partisan activity to all 600 federal agencies is terrifying. And this is as good an argument for limited government as any that anybody can make. The fact that we have 600 federal agencies is offensive in the extreme. The question is, what is he going to do? And I think that what he is going to do is probably riffing on what happened in 2020. It's going to be a blend of blatantly illegal election activity on the part of these agencies coordinated by some of their corporate lackeys. You know, Twitter and Facebook come to mind.
Oh, yeah.
And the question is, how does one combat that? How do we combat that? And I honestly don't know the answer. There is, you know, the limitation on all conservative speech is, I think that conservative speech is probably more common on blogs than anywhere else. And even there, we are constrained because of the very real possibility that some of us will be deplatformed by, you know, the credit card company that deals with people who donate to websites, you know, and a million other things, you know, throttling bandwidth, things like that. I saw my own email company. This may be coincidence, but 90% of the emails I got from gun sellers, from gun companies, gun products, end up in the junk file, and I have to tag them specifically to get them. Otherwise, they stay on the corporate servers. Now, I have my study has an N of one. So is this reality, or is it just, you know, shitty coincidence? I have no idea, but I'm suspicious.
You know, beyond that, you have, you know, there's also the lawfare that is being ramped up like crazy. I think it's this sick looking dude, David Brock, and, you know, MoveOn.org and Soros, who had, they've literally assembled legions of lawyers to file lawsuits against, you know, I think against anyone who may have been associated with Trump, or any candidate who has been associated with Trump, and literally saying that they were at the rallies, and just throw lawsuits at people just to, so they have to be now divert attention from their campaign to try to fight these lawsuits. And that's another part of it. But when you talk about what other things that can be done besides just the free speech aspect of it, I'm thinking, you know, I go back to the 2020 election when we saw in, I believe it was Atlanta, after the famous toilet overflowing that flooded six different states, all of us, and in Detroit, really, in particular, I think it was there in Michigan, all of the Republican election observers were kicked out of the room and kicked out of the building, and the windows were, and the doors were taped shut, and nobody could see what was going on. So I was going to say, well, why don't we just hire people and make sure and protest that and make sure you refuse to leave when they want you to leave. But what's to stop them from calling in the police or the FBI or the DOJ or whoever it is that's going to literally arrest people and drag them out, claiming that the people who are trying to prevent the fraud are interfering with the election? I fear that something like that could happen, and that could touch off, who knows what it could touch off. But that really is kind of where the rubber has to meet the road. If you remember back in 2008 or 2012, when the Black Panthers were in Philadelphia making sure that everybody voted for Obama. I mean, what would happen if you'd send, you know, I wouldn't say Proud Boys or whoever it is, or just a bunch of independent concerned citizens would go to these polling places to say, no, we're watching what's going on. It wouldn't stand for that in a minute. You might even have a riot on your hands or worse. So there's no way to, you know, when he's weaponizing the entire federal government, you better believe law enforcement is involved as well. Could be the, and now we have the new, as I call it, the Waffen IRS, with the 87,000 newly minted agents that are going to go after anybody and everybody. And of course, you have law enforcement and the police who are not going to do anything because they don't want to risk their pensions. They don't want to risk their jobs. So this is just, you know, goon show, banana republic tactics once again rearing their head. And we're trying to do the right thing and play by the rules, thinking that, you know, let's vote, break out of this, let's just overwhelm. And this is what I find so revolting in the extreme, that it's now an accepted way of life that we have to overcome the potential steal and the fraud, or whatever level of steal and fraud that we think is going to be with massive waves of voters. That we have to do that or even think of that in the first place is an indicator that our society and our nation is gone completely.
But I think you're onto something, though, and that is that, you know, for so long we have played by the rules. You know, we are the polite Republican Party. We are the polite conservative party. We convince people through force of intellect, and not through force of arms or force of, you know, of crowds. But the reality is that we should not play by the rules anymore. If we continue to play by the rules, we will lose, because our enemies, those on the left, do not play by the rules. They laugh at the rules. They use the rules against us. You know, it's so obvious. And the fact that Abbott and DeSantis just sort of played with the rules a little bit and have created this huge uproar is a perfect indication of what needs to happen in the future. You know, if there are 1,000 people chanting outside of a voting place that you cannot shut down or counting, I'm not sure what they call them, but that you cannot.
The tabulation, shut down, is it the tabulation centers?
Or whatever they're called. You know, if you have 1,000 people protesting that it cannot be shut off from the public, well, that's going to be tough. What are you going to do? Arrest every one of 1,000? Yeah, probably. But if that,
they would love that
across the United States, then maybe that is the answer. But absolutely, you are correct that we have played by the rules and we are losing because of it.
Well, here's the nub of that. Let's say you wanted to form an organization, you know, in order to ensure security at voting stations, at polling centers, nonviolent, just poll watchers and poll observers. You think they're going to let you do that? Of course not. The IRS is going to slow walk your application to be a 501c3, like they did with the Tea Party and Lois Lerner and John Koskinen did 10 years ago. And if you even just do that just on your own, just walk into a polling station, the cops will be sicked on you. You know, you'll be clubbed like ironically, the civil rights protesters back in the South, and the dogs and the water hoses will be turned on us. Here we are 60 odd years later, and the roles are reversed. The Democrats are doing it again, except it's us, you know, we the people. And in a way, I think they're rooting for that. The left wants something like this to happen so they could use that as a pretext to declare, you see, these filthy white supremacist Republicans are trying to intimidate people at the polling booths. This is fascism, my friends. This is semi-fascism or demi-fascism or quattro fascism, with all deference to Susie Quattro, whatever you want to define it. And we now have to shut down the Republican Party. They are now they're an insurrectionist group and anti-American and enemies of the people, and that's it. So they're itching for this, and whatever they can't concoct themselves, whatever phony, you know, Gleiwitz incident that touched off World War II in 1939, you know, they'll do it themselves. I mean, if innocent people, you know, if regular Americans are going to be nonviolent, or and they, you know, they'll doing the terrorism that we refuse to do ourselves so that they can blame it on us. But no, something has to.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You mentioned something about the civil rights movement of 60 years ago, 70 years ago. That's a fascinating comparison, because the reality of it has been that Black America was completely disenfranchised by the Democrat Party. They have been convinced to vote 95% Democrat, and if they don't vote, their ballot will be voted for them. And President Trump began to drag Black America out of that malaise, out of that hole that the Democrats have dug for them. And they have been enfranchised. They have been shown that there is an opportunity outside of the Democrat Party. They have been shown an alternative. And I wonder if that isn't one of the many reasons why the left is frothing at the mouth and just insane in their hatred for President Trump, because he pulled back the curtain on Black America and said, hey, you know something? This is sort of neat. You can vote for anybody you want, and you can have a job. And well, he said, enter the middle class. Isn't that neat?
Yes, his famous quote was, look, you've been voting for these people for however many decades now, and what have you got? You know, they're basically killing you. You know, what have you got to lose? Vote for me. Yep. What have you got to lose? That's, you know, everybody riffs, you know, Trump's an idiot, Trump's this, Trump's that. Let me tell you something. He is an amazing master communicator. When you can say that, and you just the way he said it, and with just the regular passion as a regular guy, say, hey, look what you get when you vote for them. What have you got to lose by voting for us? He cut through all the bullshit of, you know, Republicans, rich, wealthy slave owners, and yeah, he showed them the way. And what was the result? For 3.5 years, Black and Hispanic and minority unemployment plummeted to historically low levels, and the conversely, their employment levels were at historically high levels. And, you know, contrary to the horrible Democrat stereotypes of you know, there's no making it, you're never going to make it in the white man's world, and you might as well just stay on welfare and let us be your sugar daddy, he showed them that was a complete lie. And you are right. They hate him personally. They hate Donald Trump personally, but what he exposed by what he said, and more importantly, what he did, that is really, you know, that's literally showing Dracula the cross right there. And that's why, you know, I know we talked about him as a candidate or not as a candidate, why I don't necessarily want to abandon him, at least from a philosophical standpoint, altogether. I mean, whether he runs or doesn't run, who knows? I mean, it looks like he will be running, but at least he's the leader of a movement, and hopefully he can get other people around him to become his acolytes, to proselytize this message and to speak the plain truth to people who need it spoken to. And DeSantis for sure is one of those people. And when he told Biden after the whole, you know, the laugh riot of sending them to Martha's Vineyard, when he just said plainly, do your damn job and secure the damn border, I mean, that cut through, and that definitely left a mark. So this is what we need more of, for sure. Do we have that in the GOP? Hopefully it's rising. It's a rising tide, and hopefully the fading away.
We have an interesting example in Virginia, Governor Youngkin, who I thought was sort of a squishy riding the conservative wave, and he was a bit lucky in his election campaign because his opponent was such a moron. But Youngkin is surprisingly strong as a conservative, and I don't know his personal political philosophy, but he is doing what resonates with the people of Virginia. And at this point, I don't care what his political philosophy is, if he is doing the right thing. Is he doing the right thing for the wrong reasons? I don't know, and I don't care. It's men like Glenn Youngkin who are going to save America, because we don't have enough DeSantises. We don't have enough Trumps. These are the, as you say, these are the people who need to lead us out of the desert and into the promised land. But it's the mass of local and state politicians who are going to fix what ails America.
You know, and speaking of Youngkin and speaking of Virginia, his, I don't know if it's his attorney general or if it's his lieutenant governor. I'm not sure. It's Winsome Sears. Here is a woman who, when she was coming up, she was fantastic. She in fighting the critical race garbage, the transsexual garbage, and defending, you know, the school boards from Biden literally and Lavrenti Garland declaring them enemies of the people, you know, and having them declared terrorists for standing up at a school board meeting. So she is also the wave of the future, as is, I think it's, if she wins, I hope that Carrie Lake in Arizona. So we do have a shot at getting really, you know, more seats at the table and hopefully being able to force out horrid people like Pierre Defecto Romney and Murkowski and Collins and McConnell, that bastard. All of these people have got to go, because without a base with which to operate, you know, we can't get anything done. We'll just be nibbling at the edges and doing as best we can. But I think with a Trump and a DeSantis and hopefully Abbott, you know, stand up, Greg. Oh, wait a minute. No, don't stand up. Let's all stand up for Greg. That's Biden. But anyway, you get, you're not laughing at that. I thought that was funny.
No, I just, you know, every time I think about that moron saying that, I get a chuckle. He's
right. But in any event, we more people like this really, you know, figuratively standing up and being counted and saying we're taking this damn party back, or we're forming our own damn party, and we're going to the first people we're going after are you, to wipe you off the face of the map, figuratively, of course. And then we're going after the Democrats, and then we're going to hopefully, you know, rigged elections and rigged government and rigged courts aside, win some elections and really begin the job of tearing this insanity down and getting at least on the road to normalcy, let alone getting there.
Well, I agree 100%. Let's go back to Virginia for just a second. So Youngkin is going to be term limited after his second term, I believe.
Yes, I believe so.
But if Winsome Sears?
Winsome Sears.
Yeah, there's a hyphen there somewhere. I don't remember what it is. She is extremely, extremely impressive. So it is very possible that Virginia will have two-term governors who are solid conservatives. And that might be the way to drag, well, just this one state, to drag Virginia back. How can you vote against an accomplished black woman for governor? I mean, how can these soccer moms vote against this woman?
No, well, she's not really black, you know?
Oh, no, of course not, because she's a conservative. Therefore, she's a white supremacist. I apologize.
Yeah, exactly. She's a total white supremacist. She's just wearing you can't say blackface. I don't know what she's wearing. Terrible. You know, it's just so horrible that exposes the whole lie of this whole thing. And it's nothing to do with race. It's got nothing to do with your genitals. It's got nothing to do with anything. It's who and what you vote for. That's what defines you. And it's look what they're trying to do with Herschel Walker in Georgia. Knock on wood, per Dave in Florida. Hopefully he'll beat this Raphael wife beaten warlock and kick him to the curb. You know, all of these things. Look what, of course, the classic is, look what they did to Clarence Thomas and continue to do to Clarence Thomas, because Clarence Thomas is a symbol of everything that the Democrats say about race in America being a complete and utter lie, and only just for their own self-aggrandizement and for their own power. That's all it is. And Donald Trump, of course, exposed that, as we circling back to Donald Trump. That's what he exposed, and this is why the left is going crazy, because they're, and especially Biden is now doing the job that Trump didn't. He's reversing everything that Trump did and destroying everything Trump did, and so all these classic Democrat voting blocks are saying, this ain't happening, babe. We are not voting for this anymore. So, and that's why the steel is, of course, the steel is always on, just as insurance, but this time it's on, you know, to really insure it. So,
well, with that, let's take a short break, and we will come back with the last segment of Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks. Thank you.
we are back for the final segment of Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, Series 2, Episode 4. And CBD has an interesting article. It's on the scourge of fentanyl. And as we all know, it's this incredibly powerful drug that is coming south of the border and from elsewhere, as CBD will, I'm sure, elucidate. And supposedly there was one seizure. I remember they seized like a couple of hundred pounds, but the official press release was that there was enough fentanyl, like 200 pounds of it, to kill like half the population of the United States, which is, it's pretty damn frightening. And as I said, a lot of this stuff is coming not just from south of the border, but it's coming from communist China. And it's obviously being shipped here for a purpose, which is to kill, maim, and screw up the population of the United States. And it is sort of, I view it as kind of a de facto act of war, if you will, but naturally nothing is really going to ever be done about it from a diplomatic point of view in that regard. But CBD, what is your take on this importation of it and what it means?
Well, first of all, the article that I looked at is headline is Biden urged by 18 state attorneys general to classify illicit fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction. And I think that's a silly public relations effort. It doesn't mean anything. Classifying a drug as a weapon of mass destruction will do exactly nothing. The real issue, of course, is that we need to secure our southern border. All this shit is coming in through Mexico and maybe up into Florida, although I'm not so sure about that. And it's a simple fix. We need to defend our borders and the fentanyl problem will go away. But let's take a step back and think about what fentanyl is. Fentanyl is the newest incarnation of heroin. And heroin was the incarnation of opium. We have always had drug addicts. We have always had people who ruin their lives taking drugs. And why we are so concerned that fentanyl is killing a bunch of people in the United States is beyond me. These are drug addicts. These are not people who go to work and somebody says, hey, you want to try fentanyl? And they say, sure, shoot it into my arm. And then they die. It doesn't work that way. These people are drug addicts. These people are going to die or destroy their lives anyway. For us to identify fentanyl as this incredible scourge, much worse than everything else, is arrant nonsense. You know, we have, well, I'm not going to say what I'm thinking. At any rate, my take on fentanyl is, yes, we should control the borders. We should decrease the amount of fentanyl coming into the United States. But making it a national priority and calling it a weapon of mass destruction is simply overkill. It is not necessary. And I do not think that spending hundreds of millions or billions of dollars on this is worth our time or money.
I'm going to try to read your mind, CBD. I think because, as always, in my mind, there is always an opportunity for a Godfather quote. If you remember Don Victor Stracci at the meeting to try to bring, to come to peace between Barzini and Corleone, when he was talking about drug addicts and a particular kind of drug addict, he said they're animals anyway. Let them lose their souls. that's one aspect of it, which is horrible. But in any event, look. Why is it that, I mean, look, you're right. We will always have drug addicts. We will always have alcoholics and so on and so forth. But when did all of this really, really ramp up? Well, it ramped up back in the 50s and 60s. And what was ramping up in the 50s and 60s? The influence of the cultural rot being imported worse than fentanyl, which was communist Marxist Leninism in our schools and in our universities, which preached dissolution, the sexual revolution, the me generation, and all of these things, which led to massive and more horrible detriment societally. And there were more drug addicts, there was more family breakups, more alcoholism, and so on and so forth. So if you really want to address this issue, you got to address the issue of from whence it came, which is the societal rot. And where did that come from? It came from the abandonment of the family, the abandonment of the church, or if you're an atheist, at least the abandonment of ethics and morality, however you want to learn those things. And that is what has led to this entire madness. And yes, you're not going to shoot fentanyl up in your arm. You're going to get it because you had something else, mostly marijuana. And what I find really effing egregious is this push to legalize marijuana in the United States. And I'm just, for two reasons. Number one, I'm thinking, wait a minute. What is marijuana? It's a dried up leaf that you roll into a piece of paper and then you inhale it into your lungs. Well, God damn it. Didn't we just spend the last 70 years demonizing something called tobacco because it caused cancer? And I'm going, what, you're not going to get cancer because you're inhaling something that doesn't even have a filter into your lungs? And not only just inhaling it and exhaling it, you're inhaling the toke, as it were, not that I know that drug reference, into your lungs and holding it there for like 30 seconds so you get the full advantage of the hit. So the hypocrisy here is nuts. And of course, who are the people pushing for the legalization of marijuana besides the communists and the people who are into societal dissolution, but a lot of politicians who stand to make a lot of money from this, along with the tobacco companies, believe it or not. That includes, first and foremost, I believe Chuck Schumer, who is really up to his neck in pushing this thing through. I would love to take a look at his stock portfolio for sure, but wouldn't anybody.
Lovely. Yeah, we have an incredible group of politicians in Washington and in some of the state houses. The idea that we should decriminalize drugs, I think, has turned into a catastrophe. You know, one of the pleasures of walking in cities outside of the United States is that the stench of marijuana is almost completely absent. I've been in London and Paris, two very big cities in the last several months. And
I would say Amsterdam is probably not on that list.
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't think that you can walk on the street. I think that you have to remain in the, what do they call them? Not tea houses.
Well, where the hookah
coffee
bar,
houses.
Who the
hell, yeah, whatever.
Coffee houses, yeah.
But when I walk in New York, and by the way, I walk in New York less and less nowadays, the stench of marijuana is sometimes overwhelming, and I find that unpleasant.
So how can you tell the stench of marijuana over all the urine and feces that are in the street?
Yeah.
You have a very good truffle hound there.
Yeah.
Anyway, my friends, I think we have, did you want to make a final point that I cut you off?
No, I just, you know, it just irritates me that fentanyl is now the scourge of the world. You know, let's think back to the 70s and even into the 80s. You know, we were getting heroin from Afghanistan, and that was a huge crisis. And oh my God, everybody's shooting up and dying, and blah 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 blah. Well, we managed it, and this is crude and cruel, and it speaks probably not very well of my personality. But you know something? If you're a heroin addict and you shoot up and there's a little bit of fentanyl in the heroin that you bought and you die, well, I don't care.
Well, you know, I guess, you know, Don Vito Corleone was right. This is a dangerous business and it's going to be our undoing in the end. But of course, you know, Sonny was hot for it. But what are you going to do? Anyway, my friends, this has been Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. JJ Sefton here wishing you, I don't know what I'm wishing you. I'm wishing you health and happiness and live long and prosper. But in this society, probably that's not going to last long. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening, folks. And by the way, remember, vote early, vote often.
And by the way, I just reminded myself, please, if you can hit our tip jar, that would really be appreciated. We, you know, it takes a lot to put these things together, and your help certainly is much appreciated. And for those who have donated, thank you so much. We'll see you on the next one, everybody.
Thanks, folks.